Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 97.
Okay, let's dig in. Starting with the good news, at least from Shuhan's perspective. A big opportunity handed to them, really, by their allies, Eastern Wu.
Yeah, the timing here is just perfect for an attack. It all hinges on this disaster that Wei suffers on their eastern border. The sources are pretty clear. The Wei commander Cao Zhu gets completely routed, like totally destroyed by Eastern Wu's Lu Sun at Xueting.
And routed isn't just losing the battle, right? We're talking catastrophic losses.
Exactly. It says utterly routed. He lost everything. Equipment, supplies, horses, the lot. Just a total wipeout.
And the consequences weren't just material. It hit Cao Zhu hard, personally.
Yeah, the sources say he made it back to Luoyang, but he was just consumed with worry, maybe shame, too. And he dies shortly after. There's this detail about a growth on his back, that flared up. So suddenly, Wei's central command is in disarray.
Okay, so chaos in the Wei leadership. Now enter Sima Yi. What's his play here?
Well, this is where you see Sima Yi's strategic thinking. While others in the Wei court are maybe panicking or even mocking him for being cautious, thinking he's scared he does something unexpected, he pulls his forces back from that eastern border immediately. Not out of fear, the analysis suggests, but because he knew what was coming next.
He saw the opening for Shuhan.
He absolutely did. He predicted Zhu Jiliang would take advantage of the chaos, the term used is Wu, and make a move. Specifically, he thought Zhu Jiel would aim for Cheng'an, likely coming through the Longxi region.
Wow. Was that just, like, the obvious move or real foresight?
I'd lean towards foresight, mainly because of the speed and conviction. He didn't wait around for reports. He acted on that principle. You hit the enemy where they're weak or distracted.
And Cao Zhu's death, that power vacuum, was exactly the kind of the emptiness or weakness Zhu Jiliang was looking for.
Plus, wasn't there a nudge from Eastern Wu as well? Yes, exactly. Eastern Wu sends an envoy over to Shuhan. They basically report their big win at Xueting and formally propose, hey, let's invade Wei together now. It really solidifies that alliance. So Zhu Jiliang sees Wei not just in chaos, but also tired, is the phrase? Exhausted. It looks like the perfect time for a coordinated strike.
Okay, so strategically, the stars seem aligned. Time to mobilize. But then something happens, something that casts a real shadow.
Yeah, we shift here from, you know, strategy and troop movements to something more personal and maybe even ominous. Zhu Jiliang holds this big feast to finalize the campaign plans. And right in the middle of it, this really strong wind kicks up from the northeast. So strong, the sources say, it snaps a big pine tree right there in the courtyard.
And Zhu Jiliang, known for reading signs, he takes this badly.
Immediately. He apparently interprets it on the spot, says it's an omen, that the state is about to lose a great general, even before they've marched.
That's chilling, yeah.
And he was right. Almost immediately, while they're probably still talking about this broken tree, Zhao Tong and Zhao Guang arrive.
Zhao Yun's sons.
Yes, and they have terrible news. Their father, the legendary general Zhao Yun Zilong, had died of illness just the previous night.
Oh, wow. Right then. That's devastating. How did Zhu Jiliang react?
The accounts describe a really powerful emotional reaction. He supposedly throws his cup down, cries out, says the state has lost a pillar, and that he personally has lost an arm.
You really feel the weight of that loss. Not just strategic, but personal, too. Zhao Yun was one of the last original heroes, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He was that link back to Liu Bei, the ultimate symbol of loyalty and protection. Even the later Lord Lu Shan mourned him deeply. He specifically remembered Zhao Yun saving him as a child during the chaos at Chengban.
Right. That famous incident.
It reinforces Zhao Yun's whole legacy. He gets posthumous honors, of course. Made great general, given the name Marquis Shunping. Buried with honors near Chengdu.
And there's poetry written about him too, isn't there? Praising his bravery, comparing him to Guan Yu and Zhang Fei.
Yes, highlighting his key battles, Han Shui, Dang Yang, and stressing that lifelong loyalty to both Liu Bei and Lu Shan. You absolutely need to cement a hero's legacy, especially then. And they act quickly to shore things up politically, too. His sons, Zhao Tong and Zhao Guang, they're immediately given positions, Tiger Guard's commander and gate commander, and specifically tasked with guarding their father's tomb. Keeps the family prominent, ensures loyalty.
Okay, so they manage the immediate aftermath of Zhao Yun's death. But as you said earlier, this loss must have just fueled the internal debate about the invasion itself.
Exactly. Zhu Jiliang has this army ready, supposedly 300,000 strong. But key officials are now really pushing back, advising Lu Shan not to go ahead with it.
So this is where the famous Second Chu Shi Biao comes in, the memorial on the expedition.
Precisely. The political resistance was significant enough that Zhu Liang felt he had to write this powerful justification. He sends Yang Yi to deliver it to the emperor. And it's not just a plan, it's this passionate argument against inaction, against waiting around for disaster to strike.
His core point wasn't, we will definitely win, was it? It was more like, if we do nothing, we definitely lose.
That's the heart of it. He frames it as existential. Sitting and waiting for ruin, he calls it, is the only guaranteed bad outcome. So attacking, even with risk, is the better choice. And he lays out these 6 points, these sort of unanswered questions aimed right at the cautious faction.
How does he structure the argument?
Well, the first few points are pretty clever. He uses Wei's own history and even Xu's founding history against the doubters. He asks, basically, how can Lu Xian expect a risk-free victory when even Liu Bang, the founder of the Han Dynasty, faced constant danger?
Okay, appealing to the founding spirit.
Right. Then he points to figures like Liu Yao and Wang Lang, who dithered with debates while their rival Sun Quan got stronger and stronger. He's saying, don't repeat that mistake.
He's making inaction look like the real danger.
Exactly. And then he uses Cao Cao, Wei's own great founder, against them too. He says, look, even Cao Cao, brilliant as he was, nearly got wiped out multiple times Nanyang Wuchao Tong Pass. So how can I, Zhu Liang, who openly admits I'm not as strong as Cao Cao, possibly guarantee a win without taking any risks?
That's quite a move. Admitting weakness to justify action.
And he doubles down. He says even Cao Cao made mistakes, lost battles, lost generals. If the emperor demands absolute certainty of success before we move, well, we'll be sitting here forever.
He's essentially taking away the it's too risky argument by acknowledging the risk up front. Makes it harder for opponents to argue against him without offering a better path forward.
But the real gut punch, the part that must have really quieted the room, comes in points 5 and 6. This is where he talks about the cost of waiting.
This is the part about losing resources.
Yes. He lays out some stark numbers. He says, just in the 1 year since they moved the base to Hanzhong, a year of relative quiet, remember they've already lost 8 key military officials, Zhao Yun being the most prominent, but others too, like Yang Kun.
8 key leaders gone in a year.
And it's not just leaders. He says they've also lost over 1,000 elite specialized soldiers. These aren't just regular infantry. These are the Kong, the Sukyu, the King Qiang troops, highly trained, hard to replace.
Wow. So he's basically saying time is actively working against us. Our best people are dying off while we debate.
Yeah.
It's a brutal calculation. He projects forward, wait a few more years, and maybe 2/3 of these remaining elite forces will be gone too, just through natural attrition, illness, age. That's stark. He's weaponizing mortality statistics.
It shifts the argument completely. It's not just opportunity knocks. It's our window is closing fast because our core strength is literally fading away. His final point seals it. He argues the cost of maintaining the army in Hanzhong, just sitting there preparing, is roughly the same as the cost of actually campaigning.
So why waste the resources and the dwindling manpower?
Exactly. Why sit on one province, waiting to be slowly strangled by the might of Wei, when you could fight now, while you still have these elite troops and experienced commanders?
It's a compelling case. Even if built on a somewhat desperate reality, it was compelling enough. Liu Xian approved the memorial. The order went out. Mobilized 300,000 troops.
Mm-hmm.
Wei Yan is named the commander, and the target is the Chen Kang Pass. Okay, so the invasion is finally on. ZGL has made his case. The troops are moving. What's Wei doing? They had Sima Yi's warning, right?
And they did. Sima Yi advises Emperor Cao Rui. Cao Zhen is appointed grand commander to organize the defense. And they bring in a new face for the vanguard, a rather memorable one.
Ah, yes, the larger-than-life general.
Wang Shuang. The sources make him sound like something out of a legend. 9 feet tall, supposedly. Wields a 60-caddy blade.
60 caddies? It's like, what, 80 pounds? For a sword?
Something like that. Plus, he apparently carries 3 hidden meteor hammers, for good measure. He's put right at the front, meant to be this terrifying spearhead against the Xu advance.
Okay, you definitely get the message they're trying to send with him. Cure intimidation.
Definitely. But Zhu Liang's immediate objective isn't this new giant. It's getting through Chen Kang. It's a critical fortress on the way to Jieting. His scouts report back. Chen Kang is tough. Deep moats, high walls, those defensive antlers or spikes everywhere. And it's held by a general Hao Zhao.
Was there any thought of just going around it?
Someone suggests it, but ZGL insists Chen Kang is vital. They need to take it. So first, he tries the diplomatic route. He sends Jin Shang. Jin Shang apparently used to be friends with Hao Zhao, the commander inside Chen Kang. The hope is maybe he can talk Hao Zhao into surrendering, avoid a siege.
How did that go over?
About as badly as possible. Zhao was having none of it. He wouldn't even really let Jin Shang make his pitch. Declares Yu Zhiliang a national enemy. There's this great reported line, "Yesterday brothers, today enemies." He makes it crystal clear his loyalty is to Wei, and he'll die defending the fortress.
So no friendly persuasion then. Did Jin Shang try again?
He did. He tried arguing from strategy. You know, look, you're isolated. You can't possibly hold out against our huge army. It's futile. But Hao Zhao just got angry. The sources say he actually drew his bow on Jin Shang, his former friend, and told him to leave immediately or he'd shoot him.
Okay, message received. Diplomacy is off the table. Hao Zhao was digging in.
Completely. So, Zhu Jiling orders the attack. He thinks Hao Zhao only has around 3,000 soldiers inside. Should be straightforward for his massive army and siege engines.
Then ZGL brings out his famous siege tech.
Starts with the cloud ladders, the Yunti, these big shielded mobile towers to get soldiers up onto the wall, standard siege practice.
The Hao Zhao was ready for them.
Instantly ready. As soon as the ladders approach, his archers unleash waves of fire arrows. Hung Jian. The ladders are made of wood. They go up in flames immediately. Soldiers on them are burned. Attack nullified.
Wow. Okay, plan A fails. What's plan B? The heavy stuff.
Yep. Bring in the battering rams. The Cheng Che. Big, heavy machines designed to just smash down gates or walls through brute force. Usually pretty effective against smaller forts.
And Hao Zhao had a counter for that, too?
An incredibly clever one. Shows real preparation. He had his troops drill holes through huge stones, thread thick ropes, Jay Sheng through them, and then swing these massive stones from the walls like giant wrecking balls.
So they smashed the battering rams before they hit the walls.
Exactly. Shattered them on approach, just totally neutralized the threat. Incredible ingenuity, really.
Okay, so attacking over the walls failed, attacking through the walls failed. What's left? Underneath.
That was ZGL's next move. Tunneling. The Zhu Di Dao. He orders Liao Hua to lead teams to dig tunnels under the city walls, hoping to emerge inside or undermine the foundations.
A classic siege tactic. Surely that would work.
You'd think so, but Hao Zhao seems to have anticipated literally everything. Inside the city walls, he had already ordered the digging of deep intersecting trenches. Counter moats, basically, called Zhonghao.
So the shoe miners tunneling in would just break through into another dig.
Precisely. They'd hit empty space, revealing their position and making the tunnel useless. Another attack method completely shut down.
This is unbelievable. Ladders, rams, tunnels, all countered. How long did this go on?
The sources say over 20 days. 20 days of continuous, varied attacks. And Zhu Diliang, with this huge army, supposedly 300,000 strong, could not take this small fortress, defended by maybe 3,000 men under Hao Zhao.
Just incredible.
To set the stage with his opponent, Cao Zhen.
Absolutely critical context.
Because he's not just some generic Wei commander, right? There's like personal stuff going on, political pressure.
Oh, big time. You have to remember, he got seriously overshadowed by Sima Yi in the previous campaigns, like completely eclipsed.
Ah, okay. So he's got something to prove.
He's desperate. Desperate for a big win. Something that restores his status, proves his worth to the Wei emperor. He needs it now, and he needs it to be, you know, his victory.
That makes sense. And that hunger, that desperation, that's his weak spot.
That's the vulnerability Kong Ming and Jiang Wei are going to exploit. Mm-hmm. It makes him kind of blind to risks that maybe should have seemed obvious.
Got it. Okay, so let's start with the crisis itself. The thing that forces Kong Ming's hand. He's already got worries about the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets news. Wei Relief Force, led by some new guy, Wang Shuang.
Yeah, Wang Shuang. And he turns out to be... let's just say, unexpectedly effective. A real problem.
Kong Ming sends out a couple of his generals, Yu Zhong and Gongqi, maybe underestimating him a bit.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Or maybe just testing the waters. But it goes badly. Horribly, in fact.
The source says Yu Zhong is killed in under 3 bouts. That's incredibly fast.
It is. And Gongqi lasts only, what, 3 bouts? Then he's cut down 2? The text specifically mentions Kong Ming is greatly surprised.
And that reaction tells you everything, doesn't it? This isn't just losing men, it's the way they lost, the speed.
Exactly. It signals this. Wang Shuang isn't just tough. He's exceptionally lethal. Something's different here. So Kong Ming has to escalate. He sends in the big guns, relatively speaking. Liao Hua, Wang Ping, and Zhang Yi. More experienced guys.
Right. And here's where we see Wang Shuang isn't just about brute force. Zhang Yi goes up against him.
They fight for a bit.
And then Wang Shuang pulls a classic move. Feign defeat. Zhao Bai, right? Turns like he's running away.
Classic tactic. And Zhang Yi, probably furious about Xinshang and Gong Ti wanting revenge, he falls for it, charges right after him.
Even though Wang Ping, who's known for being cautious, sees it happening, he actually shouts out, "Do not pursue."
Yeah, but Zhang Yi is caught up in the moment, ignores the warning completely. That heat of battle adrenaline, maybe some arrogance,
yeah,
it costs him big time.
Because Wang Shuang isn't planning on a standard sword fight on the retreat. He has a trick up his sleeve.
He does. As Zhang Yi closes in, Wang Shuang whips around and uses something. Well, unexpected. The Lixing Shui. The Meteor Hammer.
A Meteor Hammer? I mean, that's not standard battlefield equipment, is it?
Not for cavalry combat, no. It's basically a weight on a chain or rope. You swing it. More for, like, tripping or stunning at mid-range. It's a total surprise weapon in this context.
And he hits Zhang Yi with it.
Square in the back. While Zhang Yi is leaning forward, charging. It's devastating.
The description is brutal. Zhang Yi gets away, but he's vomiting blood, severely wounded.
Yeah, multiple mouthfuls of blood, the text says. It tells you the impact was serious, probably internal injuries.
So the personal cost is high, but the military cost, that's even bigger, right?
Oh, absolutely. Tactically, it's a disaster for Xu. Wang Shuang, having driven them back, immediately digs in outside Chen Kang.
Yeah.
And we're not talking shallow ditches here.
No, the description sounds intense. Heavy fortifications, palisades, deep trenches, even double walls.
He locks it down. That whole Chen Kang approach, which was already tough because of Hao Zhao holding the fortress, now it's basically impassable. Wang Shuang has slammed the door shut.
So in like one afternoon, Cummings lost two generals, another is badly hurt, and his main strategic route is blocked.
Yep. The original plan is just gone, kaput. You can't just push through that.
So you can't stick with the plan. Time for a rethink. A big one.
A fundamental strategic shift is needed. Kong Ming realizes trying to force Chen Kang now would just bleed his army dry, waste precious time. So he turns to his advisors and significantly to Jiang Wei.
Ah, Jiang Wei. He's relatively new to Kong Ming's inner circle at this point, isn't he? But very sharp.
Very sharp. And crucially, he understands Wei. He used to be on their side, remember. He brings not just military smarts, but maybe a better insight into the Wei mindset, especially someone like Cao Zhen.
Okay, so what's Jiang Wei's idea?
It's brilliant because it addresses the blocked route, but also sets a trap specifically designed for Cao Zhen's ambition.
Okay, how does it work tactically first?
Tactically, it's a major pivot. They basically leave only token forces to keep up appearances near Chen Kang and Jining Wanping, Li Hui, Wei Yan. Just enough to make Wei think they're still focused there.
Okay.
But the main army, the bulk of the force under Ma Dai, Guanxing, Zhang Bao, they secretly divert. They take this smaller, less obvious path through Xi Valley, heading back towards Qishan.
Xi Valley. That sounds familiar. A bit treacherous.
It is. Narrow, difficult terrain. But that's part of the deception. While the army moves, Jiang Wei tells Cao Ming he has a plan, a deception. He specifically says he can use this to capture Cao Zhen himself.
Wow, ambitious. Xia Yanqi, he's promising to nab the commander-in-chief.
Exactly. And the target is Cao Zhen's psychology. Remember, Cao Zhen's isn't on the front line here. He's appointed Fei Yao as the field commander.
Mm.
Cao Zhen's back at headquarters, eager for good news, for something he can take credit for.
Right, the guy desperate for glory, so Jiang Wei knows his audience.
Perfectly. And the plan uses a classic espionage trope, the fake defector.
Ah, okay. Tell me about this setup.
So some soldiers supposedly capture a man near the Wei lines. They bring this guy before Cao Zhen. He claims to be a trusted confidant of Zhang Wei's.
Convenient.
Extremely convenient. He says he's carrying a secret message from Zhang Wei. And here's a key detail. The letter is supposedly taken from his inner clothing. Ti Ru Yi Nei. It implies extreme secrecy, urgency, something hidden close to the heart.
Okay, that adds a layer of drama, maybe perceived authenticity.
Right. But it should also ring alarm bells, shouldn't it? I mean, if you're a top general planning to defect, do you write down the entire plan and give it to one guy who then immediately gets captured?
Yeah, seems risky, a bit too neat.
A shrewd commander, someone not blinded by ambition, might pause there, might think, wait a minute.
But Cao Zhen isn't thinking clearly. He needs this to be real.
Exactly. He's filtering everything through his desire for that victory. And the letter itself, it's perfectly crafted to feed that desire.
What does it say?
It claims Jiang Wei deeply regrets being, quote, trapped by Kong Ming. That he still feels loyal to Wei, his original state. He wants to redeem himself, make amends. It plays right into Cao Zhen's likely view of Jiang Wei as maybe opportunistic or coerced.
A plea for forgiveness, basically.
Wrapped up in a battle plan. and the plan itself is designed to sound irresistible to Cao Zhen.
Okay, what's the proposed action?
Jiang Wei supposedly advises Cao Zhen to meet the Shu forces and then feign defeat. Let his troops fall back.
Ironically, the same tactic Wang Shuang just used against Zhang Yu.
Precisely. Maybe that makes it seem more plausible. Then Jiang Wei promises that he will set a fire behind the retreating Shu army, supposedly burning their supplies, as a signal.
The signal.
That's the cue for Cao Zhen to turn his retreating forces around, counterattack, and crush the Shu army, capturing Kang Ming himself in the process.
It sounds perfect. Almost divinely ordained if you're Cao Zhen.
And that's exactly how he takes it. The text says he's overjoyed, believes heaven is helping him succeed. Hubris kicks in, full throttle.
But surely someone speaks up. Isn't Fei Yao, the guy actually commanding the troops, a bit wary?
Thankfully, yes. Fei Yao represents the voice of caution. He argues against it. He warns Cao Zhen, basically saying, look, Su Jilhang is notoriously crafty, and Jiang Wei is smart Jiguang, widely knowledgeable. This could easily be a trick.
Sound advice, professional military advice.
The kind Cao Zhen absolutely ignores. He dismisses Fei Yao's concerns, pointing to Jiang Wei's past service in Wei as proof the letter must be genuine. His desire for personal glory overrides basic operational security.
So what does he do?
He orders Fei Yao to take 50,000 troops, 50,000 into Ji Valley, to act as the bait, the retreating force. He even promises Fei Yao all the credit if it works, trying to buy his compliance.
50,000 men, based on one captured letter and a commander's ego.
Wow. It's a massive gamble driven entirely by personal ambition.
Okay, so the trap is set. Fei Yao leads his huge force into the narrow Ji Valley. How does the deception unfold?
It's not instant. This is where the psychological element really ramps up. The Shu forces don't just attack once. They advance, then retreat. Then they advance again, then retreat again.
How long does this go on?
Three times, apparently, over nearly a full day, from late one afternoon to the next. Almost 24 hours of this back and forth.
What's the point of dragging it out like that?
It's psychological warfare. It wears the Wei troops down physically, obviously, but more importantly, mentally. They're constantly on edge, never knowing if the next advance is the real one. They daren't rest properly.
Decision fatigue. Hypervigilance.
Exactly. By the time the final act begins, Fei Yao's army is exhausted, strung out, and their judgment is likely impaired. They're desperate for it to be over.
Okay, so the Wei troops are ragged. What happens next?
Just as they finally try to pause, maybe prepare some food, thinking there's a lull, suddenly shouts erupt, and then Kang Ming himself appears.
In his four-wheeled cart.
In the iconic four-wheeled cart. It adds this sense of authority, of the mastermind overseeing the final move. The Shu forces under him make a show of attacking.
And the Wei troops, exhausted, react how?
They fall back again, as they've been conditioned to do by the previous feints. But this time, as they retreat, Fei Yao looks back.
And he sees it.
He sees fire rising from behind the fleeing Shu army, just like the letter promised.
The signal. The how who.
He thinks it's the signal. In his exhausted confirmation bias state, he makes that critical error. He assumes this is Jiang Wei fulfilling his promise.
Oh no. So he orders the attack.
He orders his weary troops to turn around and charge back into the disorganized Shu ranks, expecting Jiang Wei's pincer movement.
Instead,
he runs headlong into a perfectly prepared, multi-pronged ambush. Guan Xing hits him from one side, Zhang Bao from another. Ma Dai closes the trap. Even Zhang Yi, recovered from his meteor hammer wound, is there.
Wow, they threw everyone into this.
Everyone. Arrows, stones rain down from the valley sides to slaughter. The Wei army, caught completely by surprise, exhausted, breaks instantly.
Fei Yao tries to escape.
He flees deeper into the valley trying to get away, but he's cut off. And who does he run into?
Let me guess. Zhang Wei.
Jiang Wei himself, waiting with fresh troops.
Oh, the irony. What does Jiang Wei say?
He delivers this absolutely chilling taunt. Something like, I was hoping to trap Cao Zhen, but hey, deceiving you works too. Essentially, Joe.
Brutal. Just rubbing it in.
Completely. Fei Yao, seeing it's hopeless, surrounded by enemies, fire blocking escape routes, he takes his own life. Zi Wen commits suicide right there.
And his army, the 50,000.
What's left of them surrenders. A catastrophic loss for Wei, engineered entirely through psychological manipulation and exploiting Cao Zhen's ego.
An incredible victory for Kang Ming and Jiang Wei. They establish their camp at Qishan. Jiang Wei gets rewarded, presumably.
He does. Though Kong Ming, ever the perfectionist, apparently expresses a slight regret. He calls it a daji, a grand plan, but used for Xiao Yang, a small purpose, meaning they only caught Fei Yao, the subordinate, instead of Cao Zhen, the main target.
Still, getting Fei Yao and 50,000 troops off the board is hardly small, right?
Strategically, no. It's huge. And the consequences back in the Wei camp are immediate.
Cao Zhen must be devastated.
Absolutely crushed.
Yeah.
Humiliated. He immediately sends an urgent appeal to the Wei Emperor Rui, basically saying the situation is critical, out of control. He needs help. Now.
And this forces the Emperor's hand.
It does. The crisis is so severe, the loss so great, that Emperor Rui has to recall the one person Cao Zhen desperately wanted to outshine.
Sima Yi.
Sima Yi. The man who's been patiently waiting in the wings.
So the Emperor summons Sima Yi, and this sets up the next phase.
It does. And we end this part of the story on a really intriguing, almost ominous note. Sima Yi comes before the Emperor, cool, confident as ever.
And says what?
He says he has a plan to defeat Kong Ming. But here's the kicker. He claims he can do it without using the Wei army. He says, Shubing Ziran Zuyi.
The Shu forces will naturally retreat on their own.
That's the claim.
Oh.
How do you make arguably the greatest strategist of the age just pack up and go home without a fight?
Okay, wow. That's a cliffhanger.